Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday morning. It's July 8th and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel. Let me introduce you to our panelists this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is the head of the roundtable. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I didn't know this was the head. It seemed awfully off to the side.
It's a table that's round. Yeah. It doesn't
it's
really
an oblong sort of table.
It's rounded. But I think you will all agree with me, besides you, Alan. I think both Libby and Mike would agree that wherever Alan is going to sit, he will be at the head of the table.
That's
awful.
Yes.
Okie dokie.
Well, no, I meant that sweetly. Cool. Yes. Libby Post is here. She's a political consultant and a regular on our program, as is Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. Welcome all. Thank you very much for being here.
Good morning.
You know, I was just freshening up, and I was listening to Ray's newscast, and I was tempted to bring up this story and include it, and then I didn't. But then when I listened to it again, I just feel like we should mention it. Does a guy who sleeps at a baseball game have a lawsuit?
No.
I mean, isn't that a frivolous lawsuit?
Well, it may be. It's going to get the guy a lot of attention. Which may be what he wants.
Well, sleeping at the baseball game got him a lot of attention, too. I don't know. Do you need more than that?
Well, so that everybody understands what this is all about.
So this this nice man is, because I can't call him a schnook, he'll sue us.
Oh, schnook is okay.
Yeah.
The other word is
not. No. Yeah. Schnook. So he's at a baseball game, and he's napping. And
sometimes it happens.
Baseball is a very boring game. So
well, it was. Yeah, it's not scintillating, and you know you wait a long time, and he was out there, and you're in the sun, and he falls asleep. So I think to make the point that the game was not scintillating, they zoom their cameras in, and the announcers on ESPN made comment regarding the napping spectator. So. He sues not only ESPN, but he also sues Major League Baseball and the Yankees. And I'm not really sure
Well, the theory is always that you sue everybody.
It's a baseless lawsuit.
You sue everybody.
First of all, the ESPN guy said, it's not the place you come to sleep. That's true. You cannot be sued for speaking the truth.
I can sleep anywhere.
Yes.
So what do you mean it's not the place you come to sleep?
But it's not the place you come to sleep. If you happen to fall asleep in between some of that slow inning progression, which happens
three
in
up,
baseball,
three down,
you know,
three
it's up, three down. It's okay. You can do it. But if you do, it's not the place where you ordinarily go to sleep.
Okay. Now, but there's something that's missing from the conversation, and that is, what is the occupation of the offended person? Do we know that?
Oh, that's a great question. No,
I thought it was
person.
Lawyer.
He's a professional litigator. No.
I don't know.
Really?
I just don't know.
Right.
No. No, probably not.
I heard it somewhere.
I think, you know, he got it. Then it went viral on Facebook or whatever, and he got embarrassed.
So, was he a doctor? Maybe he was a doctor, a lawyer, or something like that.
You just leave it alone. It's a one cycle
story. He was 26 years old.
He was 26?
He is 26.
He's 26. He shouldn't be falling asleep.
But it's viral around the world now.
Yeah,
you see.
It is.
So if...
Right. Well, that's a really interesting point, Alan. Now, if you do some faux pas, like you do some embarrassing thing at a baseball game and you're captured on video, it becomes viral, and then the ridicule is outrageous. I mean, I'm sure he's being ridiculed all over Facebook and all over social media and derided on cable news channels, and even the topic of a discussion on a WAMC roundtable, perhaps. But after so much of this attention, it becomes overwhelmingly offensive to some people, and they want to strike out and blame somebody. But who can you blame? I mean, ESPN was covering the game, and that was one of the things that happened in that stadium.
And I guess MLB comes in because they posted a video saying tired fan naps in the stands, and they published it to MLB.com, which it's a funny picture, I have to say. It's a very amusing.
I mean, I'm sympathetic to this guy because I can fall asleep anywhere and stay asleep.
Okay, I can too. Yeah, I slept through Les Mis twice. But the question is...
Well, that's not hard.
No, it's not. But the question is, you know, and
not
also...
Not the movie.
Let us mention, by the way, that this is probably like a $150 nap, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
You
and
know,
don't the, you...
the tickets aren't cheap.
But isn't there something that you, By buying a ticket, you give up your rights.
Absolutely. You're going to be on television. Right. You're going to be televised.
It's just the way it is, folks.
When I first heard it, I thought maybe he had been hit by a foul ball while he was sleeping, and that was part of it. And even then, you don't have the right. You've already given up. By walking through the door, purchasing the ticket, and walking through the door, you agree to all that fine print on the back of the ticket.
You know, it's just about easy way to make a buck.
Well,
maybe.
And we'll see what happens.
Well, it speaks to how litigious society is.
One thing is for sure, if he was worried about being made a fool of,
this didn't help.
Well, this is making it much, much worse.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens. As I said, I wasn't going to bring it up, but now I'm kind of glad I did. Okay, let's go to our stories of what's happening in the world. And I guess the other big story in the New York papers is legalization in New York. This also comes in with a story, we can get to both of these, about legalization of medical marijuana in New York, as well as Washington getting ready for...
Washington State.
Washington State getting ready for the start of recreational marijuana sales, much like the state of Colorado. And they're getting ready. The pot shops have set up shop, if you will, and they're ready. But... interestingly enough, Washington State still very divided over the issue, and the licenses went out yesterday, and they can start up sometime this week. Then the medical marijuana legislation passed in Albany yesterday.
Well, so you've always got to put yourself into Andrew Cuomo, the master tactician, some say Machiavellian politician. You've got to put yourself into his spot and say, okay, what was he thinking? On the one hand, he's positioned himself as a liberal conservative or a conservative liberal or whatever is convenient at a particular, you know, moment. So
pragmatist, I think, is maybe one.
Well, that's what his father used to say. He used to quote a man named Parkinson who didn't exist, A.J. Parkinson, and called himself a progressive pragmatist.
Right.
But I don't think that's Andrew. I think Andrew is much more calculating than Papa was, number one. And you can just, okay, so you project yourself in, okay, all my liberals are calling for medical marijuana. It's happening in other states. We're going to have to give them something. What's the something? And what's beautiful about the system is that all the proponents of a reform like medical marijuana, or so-called reform, are always out there ready to take credit for anything that passes. And this is one lousy bill, because what it does is it doesn't allow people to smoke. It becomes another medicine. So that way, he can always fall back on it when he's out in Kansas and they say, you were for medical marijuana. And he say, no, because I did that because it was needed. So, I was very, very conservative about the way we did it. I can pull the plug. My health commissioner can pull the plug anytime that they want. It's going to be reduced to a few diseases and to a few and a few places that you have to go to get it.
It seems like there's so much red tape in that. Why bother if you're going to make it that?
Why bother? Because he gets the issue. That's why bother.
He gets to say,
I did it to my liberals, and then to the conservatives, he said, yeah, but because a lot of people see, a lot of respectable people do see marijuana as a gateway drug. And, Libby, I see you making that face at me, but I mean...
no more of a gateway than alcohol is, or pills, or Oxycontin, any of the other ones.
Libby,
and the fact of the matter is that marijuana is not... that's horrible.
Libby, I happen to agree with you on the issue, but do 10 wrongs make a right? No, the answer is no. So you can't say because there's Oxycontin out there.
So then let's outlaw alcohol. What? Period, end of story.
We tried that. That didn't work out.
Right. And so, so this isn't really going to work out either in the long run. It's absurd.
What's not going to work out is that you're not really decriminalizing. And so what's going to happen is the people who still want to smoke are going to go to where they've always been going to get the smoke.
So But let's look at the two sides of this and geographic side. So you have Washington State on the left coast that is saying, all right, we are going to sell recreational marijuana, mm-hmm. as does Colorado. We are going to sell recreational marijuana. The pot shops are out. They're up. They're running. They go to town. Meanwhile, in New York, we are talking about medical marijuana. And it is under very, very strict conditions. And it just seems like we're at polar opposites here. And you wonder at what point this issue will start to come to kind of a middle ground.
Well, I think what happens is we wait until we see what happens with Washington
Colorado.
And if it works and if people are there, they're going to demand it here and they'll get it.
I think it's going to be like marriage, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, well, state at a time.
Mm-hmm. You'll reach a tipping point and it'll all be over.
Exactly.
Well, let me ask you this. What do you think will happen a couple of years from now? Because it'll take a couple of years for New York to roll out this plan, which is another disappointment to people who are waiting for the benefits of medical marijuana. But when they do roll it out and it's in process and doctors can prescribe it for certain medical treatments, and people then get arrested for marijuana possession, and they go to court and they go before the judge and they said, Your Honor, I needed it because of a medical condition. Do you think judges will be lenient, or do you think they'll, you know, and it just may erode the whole way that people look at marijuana? I wonder how harsh judges will be and how harsh and enforcing police will be.
I realize that this may be a gross generalization, but my understanding of the California medical marijuana law is that pretty much everyone in California who uses the drug has a back condition where medical marijuana is necessary.
That's because everybody does have a back condition.
What you're suggesting is it's fairly easy to get a prescription to buy marijuana in California.
Right.
Yeah. But I don't think it's going to be that easy here.
Well, no.
It's not like you're going to be able to smoke it here.
Nope,
they're using derivatives. They're going to put it in a pill, or it's
vapor.
Going to be different.
They'll have a vapor, people with respiratory.
Right.
Treatments. That's why I find it so fascinating.
Like my Advair.
Right, kind of like
put it in the morning.
There'll be a black market for those.
That's why I find what Alan was saying so fascinating is because you get the issue, but you're not really doing that much, are you?
Well, no, I think he wants the issue. I think to understand Andrew is to understand he wants the issue, but he wants the brakes on it just in case he has to turn around and say to Kansas people,
All it has to do is get out of hand and I will stop it, he can promise.
Right.
And he does. He has the statutory authority to unilaterally halt the program.
And we've seen this again and again and again with this guy. Mm-hmm. So what he does a lot is he says, okay, I'm going to negotiate a anti-corruption package. Well, the anti-corruption package twice now has stunk. And then he gets rid of the Moreland Act Commission, which he appointed in the first place to go after corruption. So again, he gets the issue. He presents on what many of us consider an unacceptable alternative. And then, and this is what really puts a fire right under me. You know what really burns?
Really?
A fire.
Burns your britches.
A fire about the yay high. Is that he gets credit for it from the lobbying agencies, the goo-goos, the good government people, who are saying, you see, they turn around to their members, we achieve this, and it's a great victory for us, when it's not.
And how much does he have in his campaign coffers?
We think he's going into the election. We think, projecting, that it'll be about $50 million.
So some people are talking about that as being somewhat hypocritical, having promoted the Joint Commission on
Perfect
Public
Example.
Ethics and then on the Moreland Act Commission. And with very limited results, he's able to claim that and then still raise what could be $50 million in a re-election campaign.
So
he has the best of both worlds. It's just like marijuana.
I was talking with a man who's running against him for governor, who says he's going to win, Howie Hawkins, from the Green from the Green Party yesterday. I did a half an hour.
The impossible dream.
The Green Party, and he said, and he told me he thought that the average pledge to the Cuomo campaign was over $1,000 per person. That's a lot of money. So, in other words,
that's not small.
You know what I mean? But that's Howie Hawkins. I can't swear.
Yeah. It would be an interesting analysis to see how many, and then what is the campaign limit? How much can you personally give the governor of New York? I'm not sure what that number is.
Do you guys ever notice that people from the left, in order to prove their bona fides, often drop their G's when they're talking?
Here we go.
When they're talking.
Here we go. Here we go.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't think it's good for them. I mean, I think it's silly.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
I'm not dropping anything.
No, clearly
or
not.
A story or anything, right?
Or a grudge or anything.
Yeah. No, he's a nice guy. Some of our people called and said, "How come you never have Howie Hawkins on the air?" And so we said, "Okay, bring him on."
Yeah, right. Okay.
We have two letters there, Alan. Why don't we get to those and then we'll
letters.
Break.
Yeah, letters. Yes. We get letters. It's true. And I'm so glad that you're keeping an eye on it all. Okay, so, all right, now we're going right up to the top of this list. Okay, dear gentlefolk, I have to agree with Dr. Allen. This is so-called compassionate medical legalization in New York. It's nothing but kicking the can down the road and a smirking butt covering by the governor. In the future, he can say he did something while actually doing nothing at all. The way this ridiculous law is set up, I can see the, quote, benefits accruing to five or six people in the whole New York State. This is nothing but pure political baloney. And that's Pete. Thanks for the show, Pete from Toland. Okay. And then Bobby C. said, some forms of medical marijuana do not contain or contain a very low percentage of THC, the psychoactive ingredient. Other medical marijuanas contain very low concentrations of THC. Another difference is how the marijuana is used. You and all the news media need to emphasize this. It's important in states like New York that are only legalizing marijuana for medical use. And then they sent us some things, which I'm certainly not going to read right now. So then somebody says, sleeping guy on ESPN. I have no proof of this, but I'm convinced that one reason ESPN aired the shot of the sleeping guy at the bowl game was that he's overweight. Ooh. I believe that made them think that he looked more like a schnook, which made it entertaining. If he'd been a well-built man with his shirt off, they might have put him on TV. But they wouldn't have said the things they said. I doubt this lawsuit will go to trial, but I expect ESPN will pay him something. Okay. And
we have 10 seconds.
Well, that's all I got.
Okay. So we welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We will continue our conversation on the roundtable with Alan and Libby and Mike. And again, your letters at roundtable@wamc.org after this short break. Welcome back to the roundtable panel, and you all can be evil people.
I don't think that's true. Yeah. I don't think that's true.
What are we talking about?
Yeah. No, you're just enjoying. You're enjoying people. A little schadenfreude. That's okay. That's fine.
Don't project.
I'm not projecting at all. I'm just. I was fascinated by the conversation. We're gonna go to Mike in a minute and talk about some of the stories. But I find the story out of Chicago is stunning to me. It is. Besides being just tragic, it is. I guess it can put a Chicago has long had problems in this area, but over the course of 84 hours during the Independence Day holiday in Chicago, 82 people were shot, 14 were killed, prompting calls from Mayor Rahm Emanuel to put a stop to gun violence in the city. The number of dead could rise because several of the injured are listed in critical condition. Many of the shootings, which began about 3:30 on Thursday, took place in some of the most violent South Side neighborhoods. Five people were reportedly shot by Chicago police, including the two who died. Speaking to an audience of the Miles Davis Magnet Academy on the city's South Side, Emanuel called for better policing, better education, stronger gun laws, and building a sense of community to address the city's gun violence. We were talking about guns yesterday, and I just think that this is a story that is, you know, what do you do about this problem where you have 82 people shot, 14 of them dead?
You know, I wonder, one could make the connect the dots between the increase in violence in New York City and the fact we now have a Democratic mayor, and some people say the Democrats are not as strong as law and order, and they stop and frisk, and
right.
That's, you know. But you had a Democratic mayor before, Rahm Emanuel. You had Dick Daley. Mm-hmm. And
different kind of Democrat.
Yeah, but a different kind of Democrat. And you just wonder, you know, if there's not this sense of we really need to clamp down. We really need to.
Do they need Rudy Giuliani?
Yeah, right. I mean, what's going on? Why is it that when there's a change in the mayor, all of a sudden there's more shootings and more deaths and more guns on the street?
I can tell you one thing. If Bill de Blasio has a, and it, there's some preliminary evidence that he may, has a problem, and people start to shoot each other in New York and crime goes up, and murders go up, then I guarantee you he's done.
Right,
so one semester, I think it's semester.
You're
academic. One
semester,
yes.
One term mayor, and he knows it.
Yeah.
So that he says, okay, no stop and frisk, but we have something else that looks a little like stop and frisk.
And Batten's like, oh, it's really not that bad. We'll see by the end of the year. It's not going to be any more than it was last year. I don't know.
Yeah, but in the meantime, they're worried about that.
Well, and then the numbers that they use in Chicago, and the Chicago Tribune has been all over this, obviously, but homicides have actually been going down since 2012. The city surpassed 500 then. By 2013, the number of homicides had fallen to 415. And I think what's making the story here is that it's Chicago is still the largest in the nation, but also in a very specified period of time, 85 in
almost one an hour.
Yeah.
Seems
Well, look. We know that drugs are increasing, and the heroin use is epidemic proportions around the country. And we know it's a black market, and we know it's criminal underground. And a lot of this is people competing for territory and killing each other. And so.
Is it all about drugs?
I think a good deal of it is about drugs.
I wonder if there was any statistic about how many of these shootings were handguns. I'll bet you, if not, probably most, right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
And you know,
we're not talking AK-47s.
Right, right. These are not assault weapons, which are big subject of debate and how they should be banned and whether they should be banned or magazines. These are people probably with concealable handguns that pull them out and use them in crimes. And, you know, something has to be done to control the availability of handguns to people who shouldn't be having them, I guess. And
when you start talking about that,
it gets very controversial.
You know, in almost any political change, it has to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening now. It's getting worse. People are going to be looking at this, and they're going to be saying, okay, we got to stand up against the pro-gun people.
Yeah. Well, you know, Chicago tried to ban, and the federal judge ruled it was unconstitutional. And I think it's drugs, but I also think it's just the poverty and the sense of hopelessness. There was a piece on NBC last night about a woman, you know, trying to get kids off the street. And one of the kids that was killed, or he was killed or was in a coma, was because he wouldn't join the gang.
Sure. Happens all the time.
Yeah. And, you know, and there's just this sense of hopelessness that, you know, ties into the economy and everything else.
Well, you take a gun and start shooting people because you're hopeless? Well, no, I think the hopelessness.
It's just this sense of hopelessness. You go to drugs, you go to gangs.
Sure.
You know, it's all put together, and that they
it becomes
don't
part of the
feel,
culture.
Right, they don't feel they have a way out, and the only way out is to not to necessarily get out, but to at least better their lives and their personal economy is to join a gang. And so, yeah, you do need hope. And when the hope is joining a gang, it's really pretty.
Yeah, that's not a good
pretty sad
a good
commentary.
Option. I mean, Rahm Emanuel did say that they need better policing, better education, stronger gun laws, and they have to build a sense of community. That he's exactly right. But how do you do that in such an impoverished community where the culture has been so violent for so long? It's a real challenge.
Well, you know, we passed over Giuliani really quickly before.
Right.
But that was his promise. That's what he was doing.
And it was a, tough time. I mean, he was brutal. I mean, you know, he was not great with the press either. He would keep the press away from crime scenes so they couldn't report it. I mean, he was a real control freak about that. Mm-hmm. And people now are, you know, they can look back at it and look at the situation now, and maybe they, you know, they look at it differently from this perspective.
We need Wyatt Earp.
Yeah. You go to Times Square, you can walk around.
Yeah.
You know, you can walk around at 11, 12 o'clock at night and and feel safe.
Well, and it you know, it's chicken egg. Once you get people out and the economy improves and there's more stores open and people are more comfortable, it's not like walking down a dark alley.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and there are many parts of Chicago, obviously, you can walk down and,
absolutely.
And be safe at 11, 12 o'clock at night. But this is in neighborhoods.
This is south side of Chicago.
Right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get some letters and we'll finish up on other stories to talk about. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC goes in Barrington Stage Company in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, presenting Kiss Me Kate, Cole Porter's musical comedy, now through July 12th on the Boyd Quinson main stage, barringtonstageco.org. Dr. Jonathan Sumber, podiatrist, Kingston, a second-generation practice focusing on family foot problems, laser treatment available, 845-331-0601. Sunwood Builders, Amherst, over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits. Working to save energy while maintaining design features, sunwood-builders.com. And Capital Counseling, mental health therapy for adults, teens, children, and couples in both private and group settings. Your lifeline to better mental health, capitalcounseling.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday morning, July 8th. Mike Spain, Libby Post, and Alan Chartok here, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC, roundtable at WAMC, where you can write like these people did.
Tom says, not enough good people with guns, so says the NRA. That's what Tom says. And Jim says, do you think that the SAFE Act is similar to the medical marijuana law? The governor got credit for passing the gun control law, but has anyone checked to see if the governor is making sure it is being enforced? Many upstate sheriffs say they may not enforce it. There's that from Tom. And then we did that one. And I think that's it. Yes, Joe?
I got one from Jody. Did you see the one from Jody?
I don't see one from, we got one here. There's a whole big long thing. I couldn't agree more. Just follow the money, the crappy law that puts money in the hands of pharmaceutical company and gives the governor some talking points. It's a plant. It grows in your window next to your violets. Now I need to have a terminal disease and spend how much to get it? ? That's absurd. I'd rather support my local businesses or grow my own. There are 50 types of cigarettes on the market, which have over 200 additives that are known carcinogens and highly physically addictive. So sorry. There's your gateway drug. Thanks for the great show. And that's from Jer. And then I'm still looking for the Jody one. I don't see it, Joe. So
Jody says, the napper is a used car salesman. There you go.
The napper is a used car salesman.
The guy from the baseball game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see. I got it.
Yep. The napper is a used car salesman, and for the last couple of years, you can print a Yankee season schedule, but can barely read it as fully half of the 8.5 times 11 by 11 sheet of paper is all disclaimers on the ticket. She said, just an FYI, I'm a Yankees fan. So there you go.
It's probably the same disclaimer for every single team.
I think you sign it where you're first born, I think.
Yeah. Absolutely. So let's go on to we can do a bonus round here and get a couple of stories in, I think. Let's start with the story that I can actually click on. There we go. Pope Francis on Monday used his first meeting with victims of clerical sexual abuse to offer his strongest condemnation of a crisis that has shaken the Roman Catholic Church, comparing priests who abuse minors to a sacrilegious cult, while begging forgiveness from victims and pledging to crack down on bishops who fail to protect children By meeting with six victims from three countries, Francis was trying to show resolve and personal empathy to address an issue on which he has faced criticism in what has otherwise been a popular papacy. While some advocates for victims praised the meeting, others dismissed it as little more than a publicity stunt.
Tough to get around. I mean, you know, this is the toughest thing that the Catholic Church has to deal with. I don't see what he can do except meet with them, apologize to them, say this is wrong, and going forward in the future, we're going to do everything in our power to make sure it doesn't happen. We're going to do what we should have been doing all along and throwing the pedophiles out of the church and cooperating with law enforcement and all the things that the church years ago would not do.
Yeah. What they have to do now to win back any credibility here is certainly he has to listen, he has to apologize, and he absolutely appears to be doing that. And some of the organizations are praising him for that, while some are still, like, for example, SNAP, which is Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, are still saying this is offering false hope, and they're really demanding more action. And I think you can see where they're coming from.
Well, do they want?
They want to see exactly what you just said play out. They want to see pedophiles being, thrown out of the priesthood. They want to see cooperation with local authorities. They want to see punishment of bishops that have allowed priests who have had problems mm-hmm. get away with it. And they're really angry. And over time, if the church is intent on resolving this crisis, they'll see that they are doing that going forward. They can't behave like they did.
Mike, as a Catholic.
A spokesman for the Catholic. No.
No, you're not. You're not.
No, I'm not.
You're a lay.
Bet I'm not.
you're a lay.
No, for that we go to Ken Volk Goldfarb.
Okay, we love him.
My nice Jewish friend.
Right, absolutely.
Plausible deniability.
That's right.
There you go.
Okay, but as a lay Catholic, when all of this broke, what did you and your family think this did? Did it have an effect on you?
Well, I'd say that, like a lot of Catholics I know, we were outraged and shocked, and I think there's been some level of denial. People would say, well, I suppose this happens, but not. And they'd hear the names of somebody accused.
Not
this person, not that person, you know. And then that would evolve gradually or maybe quickly for some people into outrage and anger that this did happen. And what I feel badly about is that there are so many wonderful priests who've dedicated their lives in their vocation, who had no problem at all, but the whole priesthood is under a cloud because of some people who have problems. Mm. And that's the saddest part to me, because I just know so many wonderful men who've dedicated their lives to their priesthood and serve their parishes and serve their people and, you know, work with homeless, work with the poor. And, you know, it's just they get blemished by this. And that's
sad. Continue to do so.
Yeah.
And also, I think, have been, in some cases, more outspoken in their parishes than the church at large has been.
One-on-one, they're pretty angry.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Condemning this and condemning the people who did it and embracing the community. But you know, the other thing is that you look at this and I understand the anger when you say, okay, you're going to meet with six people and you're going to say I'm sorry for however many years later after the fact, and meanwhile you 2 weeks ago or however many 2 months ago they made the Pope, who's most of this occurred under the on his watch,
right,
a saint,
right.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's hard for me to come to terms with.
And you were raised as a very good Catholic kid, weren't you?
I was raised as, I don't know what constitutes good, but yes.
You were an altar boy.
You had an uncle uncle who was a bishop. I think that makes you.
Yeah, well, all right. That's true. That is true.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Bishop Stephen Dunham.
And so was your faith shaken?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I agree with Mike entirely. And not only that, but I also think it makes you how do I put this? I think it makes you unnecessarily skeptical of people when they come into, because mm-hmm. where we are, priests change a lot. And then you wonder, then you're like, well, why?
Well,
you know,
what?
Right. What's this
why
coming
was he
from?
Transferred
what,
out?
You know, right. And why are they moving? Why? What's this? And that's...
They need to be transparent.
And I think that's unfortunate. Yeah.
Well, will it lead to other changes? I mean, for example, women as priests.
Lead to women as priests?
Yes. In other words, when the fabric of trust is... When the fabric of trust is... dealt with, are you able to destroy? Are you able to say, okay, what introduction of what reforms would make people more ready to support the church, which they now have doubts about?
I think getting rid of the celibacy requirement.
Yes.
So marriage?
Marriage. Not that that's going to mean that the people who abuse the kids... Oh, just because they get married, they're not going to be pedophiles.
No, but it'll change the culture.
It'll change the culture. Yeah. I think women being priests would change the culture, but we're talking about a wholesale change of the culture of the church.
But I firmly believe it's all going to happen. Men will be able to marry, and women will be able to become priests. Probably, 300-400 years, Joe?
Yeah. I would think at a glacial pace, we'll hit this. I was struck by something Alan said earlier about, you know, this is the greatest the challenge facing the Catholic Church, and I agree with that, and yet you look at all of the challenges and the inclusion of women and the exclusion of women over the last 2,000 years, and the continual lack, even under this pope, who is again has been very has done many good things, I think, is startling to me, and I think that's what brings up Mike's point about, you know, 300-400 years, because you don't see the writing seems to be on the wall just about everywhere. You go into an individual church and you will hear priests talk about the inclusion and the necessity of it, and yet it doesn't hit that higher
level. Well, this is a group of people in a very big ivory tower who just have blinders on to the reality. They had blinders on
you surround yourself with people who affirm everything. But, you know, that's the one advantage I think that Francis has here. He's building his advisors are from outside the traditional, Roman Curia, and he's getting points of view in from all over the globe, from, you know, third world countries. He's brought in Cardinal O'Malley from Boston to be an advisor, and he's not one of the old boy network types. I mean, so, you know, that's how change happens. You sort of open it up. So I think there is a lot of hope on the part of progressive Catholics who want to see change. It just, you got to get used to it. It's not going to happen overnight.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, the only other thing is his comments about, and I generally approve of the meeting, but I have to say that his comments about it being a sacrilegious cult of the priests who abuse the minors. Well, the whole culture of the Catholic Church that allowed these priests to go from one place to another to brush under the rug. Well, that was a whole culture.
And the other part of this, what you just said, Mike, you know, it's bringing in all these other people. Ultimately, all those other people want to see the church be maintained and survive, and they will do what they need to do to do that.
Well, it depends who you bring in. I mean, and how do you define that? And, you know, what their points of view are? What does the church need to do to thrive? And many believe they need to be open on issues of sexuality and issues of women's role in the church and marriage for priesthood. So lightning round continues.
Yeah, well, we're done. We're out of time, but we got a lot of lightning in that round, so that's not too bad, and maybe more to come.
We walk outside.
Absolutely. Alan, Libby, Mike, thank you as always for being here. It's a great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.